flavour.
This is Cambridge Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling up hot cakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Condicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, our fortnightly roundup of food and drink in and around Cambridge. I am Matt Bentman and I am here with Alan Alder live in our Gwydir Street studio.
And Matt has been out and about discovering the revitalised kiosks in a couple of Cambridge's outdoor spaces, so we've got more about that coming up.
Sue Bailey has been talking to the foraging chef Steve Thompson about what to forage at the moment and about his link up with Chong Chong Bo, cooking and providing paired wines in your home.
It's Ramadan at the moment, when Muslims fast during daylight hours, and I went to Noshi, the Afghan coffee shop and restaurant, to find out about their iftar menu. That's the meal that breaks the fast when night begins to fall.
Meanwhile, Tim Haywood of Fitzbillies and the Financial Times ends his time as a restaurant reviewer for the paper, and, starting today, moves on to writing more generally about food. We have a look about his first piece, which is about reclassifying the sandwich, and also listen back to him talking about being a restaurant reviewer.
We'll have regular features too: free food in Cambridge, local food and drink news, social media updates, and, at the end of the programme, our jobs roundup. So let's go.
Yeah, and we begin with getting some food in the park.
Jesus Green, Sunday morning. The sun's out, but it's still cold. There goes a jogger. Now, when someone says the word kiosk to you, what kind of food goes through your mind?
I perceive a kiosk as somewhere you stand up, get a coffee or something that you don't even think about and walk off with it. I don't even think of it as somewhere you can sit down.
No, it's nothing elaborate, is it?
No. And also, I never think of a kiosk as making their own food. I think of them as selling you some crisps or some Coke or some chocolate.
Yeah.
So this is very different.
Very different indeed. This is the Kiosk on the Green. That's the proper name of these kiosks. And there's two of them now. One on Jesus Green, the other on Christ Peace, next to the bus station. They're run by Amanda Langley, who wants to change the public's view of kiosks by revitalising these two that have been here for years with this new vision.
It's because she's got the background in chefing, you know.
Yeah.
When you've done 3 years of apprenticeship at the University Arms Hotel, you're going to come out doing nice food, aren't you?
Yeah. We've got one of the fanciest kiosks in the country, possibly.
Well, I think so, probably.
Here's Amanda.
So, I've done an apprenticeship at the University Arms. I was actually the first woman they had in the kitchen, because they didn't like girls in the kitchen in those days.
What kind of stuff were you cooking at the University Arms?
We've done everything from, you know, butchery. I can bone out a whole leg of veal, for example, barons of beef. We've done all our own fish butchery. I can fillet lemon soles by the case and cut chickens for sauté. And the other people in the group were like, you know, head chef of Jesus or head chef of this place. And I was just a mum at that point. And when it came to cutting a chicken for sauté, they were amazed that, you know, I just done it. But I was doing them by the cases of chickens at the University Arms, so... My parents had a pub in Cambridge called the Cross Keys on Saxon Street there, do you know, opposite the Royal Cambridge Hotel. It's just off Lensfield Road, really. So I kind of used what I used to do in the pub and brought it to the kiosk.
Hello. Can I get a strawberry ice cream in a cone?
In a cone?
In a cone!
Yes,
in a
cone.
And then I'd had enough of the pub, so I needed something else. And I was looking for a business in Cambridge and I saw this on the council website. So I thought, oh, could be nice. Done a business plan and they chose me. So I was lucky.
Amanda's cooking experience carries over into some interesting offerings at the kiosk on the Green. Like the toasties, for instance. Not your standard fare.
Where are you going to get a steak and blue cheese toasty? Yeah.
Down by the river.
Yeah. Tell you what, the three cheese and chilli jam is absolutely top notch. Every time I go to the Christ Pieces one, I have one of those. That's Leanne's favourite that works there.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
I started with ham and cheese, then graduated to three cheese. You've got to try it. And also it changes all the time. Mm. Like she just said, the guys that actually do the punting, they come here for their lunch. She's doing extra things because they're going to get bored with the same stuff. Yeah. That's so thoughtful, isn't it?
Here come some punters now.
Thank you. I use the place quite a bit, to be fair. It was when the new lady got ownership of it, she kind of changed it around because I think she realised that us down here every morning are probably our main audience right now, are like a staple.
Yeah.
So she's definitely catered the newer business towards us, I'd say.
Yeah.
Probably caters more towards the tourism as well, towards the summer, but like, yeah, she's become quite the pillar of J Green. She does us all well, right?
Lots of ice creams as well in like the summer. Lots of people come off the boats and then they get an ice cream or a sandwich or something. So yeah, it's good.
Cool. Right, I've got to run anyway, but brilliant little kiosk. Take care there, guys.
Thank you.
It's what keeps the punters punting.
Two sausage, bacon, egg.
Yeah, two sausage, bacon, and egg.
Mostly just like a breakfast bap in the morning. Want to keep it nice and warm because it's cold in this sort of weather.
Is that one of those baps you can put the order together, you know? Like...
Yeah, so you can choose it yourself, so like...
Egg, bacon, cheese, sausage patty, tomato, mushrooms.
Bacon or the egg or the cheese or the tomato or something like that.
Halloumi.
Got a big frying griddle and everything there.
She's just been doing halloumi on that.
That's what tells me that, okay, we are in the 2020s now. This isn't 1996 kiosk anymore.
No.
Halloumi from a kiosk.
Yeah, and it looked so nice as well.
Large hot chocolate!
I'm gonna get it to her.
Then we have one baby chino and one decaf cappuccino and one croissant.
We've got Stir Bakery just up the road, so we use Stir for our bread. Then they deliver to us every morning, 7 days a week. Then I wanted a local cake maker and I found Rachel from Rachel Bakes.
Yeah.
She's in Fenditton. So she now supplies all our cookies and loaf cakes, carrot cakes, etc.
We're talking like chocolate brownies, jammy Dodger slices, millionaire shortbreads, Rocky Road Biscoff.
Biscoff, Rocky Road. And we've got a new one. We've just had it for a couple of weeks, the Kinder Bueno. They're a bit dangerous, but they're lovely. She's always coming up with new stuff. She does an amazing carrot cake that we have here, lemon drizzle. We have saffron ice cream, which is based in Saffron Walden. Artisan ice cream scoops.
With flavours like pistachio, mango sorbet and Biscoff.
We make our toasties fresh every day, different flavours. In fact, yesterday we sold out of every single toastie. There was actually, I was saying, the only one left was the vegan one. We change, I think, what can we put in a toastie? Because you can pretty much put anything in a toastie.
Well, they're a lot cheaper than everywhere else, and they're fantastically good toasties with really good quality ingredients. You know, we're talking £5-6 rather than £7-9 most other places locally.
This week we've had steak and blue cheese, and we do a barbecue pulled pork one. I bought a slow cooker, so we just put the pork in the slow cooker and do it here. So it's, you know, you have to adapt.
That's the way she thinks, you know, she gets around things.
Because it's so small and we, you know, we're not a restaurant, are we? So
I saw that was one of the things that was popular, your three cheese and chilli jam.
Yeah, and that's...
All of these toasties are on sourdough from Stir.
All sourdough, yeah.
Yeah.
All sourdough.
Goat's cheese, chutney and pepper. Cajun bean, that's the vegan one.
Yeah, that's the vegan one.
Yeah. Pastrami gherkin and mustard, very American. Peri peri chicken.
Yeah.
Lots of variety. I mean, you know, you talk about the place being smallish, but there's still plenty of variety there.
Yeah, there is. And in the summer, we do smoked salmon bagels and stuffed focaccia buns and all sorts.
There you go. Thank you very much. Give you a shout in about 2 or 3 minutes. Thank you, Mike.
If you're a bank manager looking at business plan for this, you want to revolutionise the kiosk, you want to change the kiosk.
It's evolved, you know. I didn't have all these thoughts in the beginning, but it's evolved. I'm working here and I'm like, let's do this or let's do that. Or I said to you, I think this summer we want to try and get some kind of acoustic music sessions here.
That'd be nice, yeah.
You know, just in the afternoon, just someone here with a guitar, or just be really nice for people, I think.
Yeah.
You know, get blankets out. They can bring a bottle of Prosecco, a few beers if they want to, or... That's what they do with the storytelling. They have the storytellers coming for the kids.
Yeah.
And they just put blankets out and just listen to stories. And we have adult stories as well. Marion Leeper, she's like a Cambridge-renowned storyteller.
There's been lots of pop-up style offerings and events at the kiosks. The Easter Bunny is appearing shortly, and there's a book swap library from the Phoenix Trust. And recently, there was a Thai food stall, and they have seasonal pop-up food stalls throughout the year. All this, and plenty of local independently supplied food, coffee from Hot Numbers, Antonia's Country Kitchen for hot sausage rolls in the winter, drinks from the Cambridge Juice Company, Scotty's Hot Scotch Eggs, and there's always new flavour fillings in the paninis, toasties and baps range.
Well, it's been great to meet you, Amanda, and just to check out how the kiosks are running, it's completely changed my view of what's on offer here and what it's like here. And we'll leave you to it because there's a good few orders on the go. Amanda Langley at the Cambridge Kiosks. That's the proper name for this place, isn't it? Cambridge Kiosk.
No, this is Kiosk in the Green and the other one is Christ Peace Kiosk.
And that's how you find them on social media as well. So Instagram is Kiosk on the Green.
And Facebook's Kiosk on the Green and Christ Peace Kiosk.
Thanks very much, Amanda.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, that was Amanda Langley at the Kiosks on the Green. And the kiosks, also, they do a discount over at Christ Peace Kiosk. And that's for bus pass holders, for coffee, sandwiches and cookies. And they do the same as well for bus drivers and taxi drivers too. So very, very good.
And now we go on to details of free food available in and around Cambridge. And where do we get the information from? It comes from the Olio app, and that's there so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
That's right. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Will Run in Coleridge Road, just opposite the park entrance, is giving away tons of rolls, brown rolls, cheese rolls, paninis, bagels, as well as lots of pastries too. Maximum of 8 pastries per person, she says. And that consists of jam donuts, almond croissants, apple slices, cinnamon swirls, pesto twists, muffins and pain au chocolat. Next up is Leah off Cherry Hinton High Street. She's got lots of frozen bread available, includes baguettes, loaves, bloomers and rolls. And Janice on Union Road, just off Hills Road, has tiger batons, white batons and ciabatta rolls. And lastly, Petra in Hildesheim has 15 ciabatta breads for collection. You know, Saturday tends to be a very bread-heavy day on Olio for Cambridge, and this one is probably the breadiest.
It is, isn't it? I was just thinking, what a lot of bread, but how good they sound, yeah. And all for nothing.
It's just incredible.
There's another app called Too Good To Go, and that has unsold food from restaurants and shops, often at less than half price, and instead of specifying what each unsold item is, the surplus food is simply put into a magic bag ready for you to take home, and that saves it from being binned at the end of the day's trade. And lots of companies, both big and small, chain and independent, use it. So it's worth a look. Too good to go.
Excellent. Let's go on to our first news break now. We begin with Checkers in Falmere. They have a nose-to-tail beef evening on the 25th of March at 7 for 7:30 p.m. Even the dessert has a beef ingredient, beef suet chocolate tort. There's also bourbon salted caramel sauce and tiramisu ice cream. The cost for that is £65 plus drinks.
Local chef Rosie Sykes has a spring supper club at the canteen in Southwold on the 28th of March at 6:30. Tickets are £49 and you book by emailing info@oldhospitalcanteen.co.uk.
Noel Young Wines in Shelford has South American food with 5 courses and 5 paired wines coming up in April.
Thorn Wines has a Bodegas Perica tasting at Stapleford Granary on the 2nd of April. That's from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. and the wines will be paired with tapas.
On the 3rd of April at the Gonville Hotel, there is a 4-course dinner with paired gins. The evening is hosted by William Lowe, Master of Wines and Master Distiller and co-founder of Cambridge Distillery. It begins at 7 p.m. and the cost is £85, which includes the dinner and the gins and a few extra surprises as well.
I can't wonder what they are. Coming up at the North Stow Tap and Social is a tap takeover by Ampersand Brew Company from Dis, and that's on the 28th of March.
The next Gwydir Street Supper Club is on the 26th of April. It's an Asian fusion night, and Kirsten Horn is currently in Japan getting inspiration for some small plates that he will add to this menu. There's still a few places remaining if you want to book.
Pudini in Willingham has a Mother's Day box for which they are taking orders now, and it includes roast chicken stuffed with truffle butter, lemon tart with Italian meringue, and strawberry and rhubarb crumble with custard. The cost is £35 per person, and collection is on the 29th of March from Willingham. As I said, bookings are being taken now.
Here's some classes coming up. On the 30th of March, there's a children's baking class. That's for Mother's Day afternoon at the Pavilion in Trumpington. This is for ages 6 to 11. And you can book a place by emailing contact at pasteandartalias.co.uk. I'll just spell that for you. So that's contact at pasteandartalias.co.uk. The cost is £12, and the organisers are also doing a children's baking class for Easter. That's on the 19th of April, which is also at the Trumpington Pavilion.
At Cambridge Cookery, there's a beef masterclass on the 26th of March, and the focus will be on using grass-fed beef and talking about its benefits. And the course will showcase the best cuts for slow cooking and also the cuts best for serving rare. But the class is 100% hands-on, and at the end, you'll have made a substantial meal, which you'll enjoy there with some red wine. And this communal dining is an important and regular feature of classes at Cambridge Cookery, and owner Tina Roche sees this as an important aspect, as she will explain shortly. It runs from 6:30 to 10:15 p.m. and costs £170.
We all like a communal dining experience and you know, eating together, talking together. I think there aren't that many opportunities where we are truly crossing the boundaries. Otherwise, you go to a restaurant or a pub, but you know, you sat at your table alone or with your family or friends. But this communal, I think, is something that people like.
And we'll have more news later. During Ramadan, Muslims fast during daylight hours, and this is the first Ramadan for Noshi, the Afghan coffee shop and restaurant in Mill Road. I went along and spoke with co-owner Miriam and deputy manager Lily about what Noshi is doing during Ramadan.
For Ramadan, Noshi's introduced lots of really exciting things. One of the things is a Ramadan iftar meal, which is a three-course iftar feast for £25 per person that's available every Tuesday and Wednesday at Noshi alongside the a la carte menu.
And iftar is a breakfast, isn't it? It is when you break your fast.
That's right. For the month of Ramadan, Muslims are going to be fasting from sunrise until sunset. So come iftar time, Muslims will break their fast with food and drink. And interestingly, this year it coincides with Lent. And so we've had some really special experiences with our staff who are fasting for Lent, breaking their fast with Muslims who are fasting for Ramadan.
That's fantastic. But how do people feel if they've been fasting all day? Does it affect them? Do they feel weak? Do they have daydreams about eating?
I think this Ramadan I've had a real appreciation for people who work in hospitality and are fasting. So a lot of our kitchen staff are fasting for Ramadan because they're from Afghanistan and so they're Muslim. And it's really special seeing how they prioritise making sure customers have food on their table to break their fast, and at the same time they're breaking their fast in the kitchen. But in Ramadan what happens is it's no longer an option to eat food if someone is fasting, so the temptation goes. But I think, for me anyway, I smell the coffee, I smell the food, I can't wait till 6 o'clock.
So people arrive quite early, do they, for it?
Yeah, so we get bookings for iftar, like sometimes half an hour before, and we actually get people pre-booking with their food choices, so they come and their food is ready for iftar, so they can just dig in as soon as they need to.
Right, and iftar happens from sunset, I suppose.
Yeah, so when the sun sets, so it changes, it gets later at the moment because the days are getting longer. So we're getting a lot of bookings around 5:30, 6 o'clock at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. It must be particularly difficult in midsummer when Ramadan falls in midsummer and the days are so long.
100%. So I fast, and in summertime, it's not so much the food that bothers me, but I get really tired when it gets past like 5, 6 p.m. If you have children and you're still going to work and you're not working in a sedentary role, it can be quite tiring.
Yeah.
For me as well, coffee, I think we've started really depending on our roasted coffee.
Yeah, I know, I have.
So what sort of things are on the iftar menu? If I've not been eating all day, I want something that's going to be satisfying, don't I?
Well, one of the things we introduced, in fact, just before Ramadan was the mini vegetarian platter. So it's a really exciting dish because it's packed with different vegetables. In fact, it's got a selection of all of our favourite dishes, which includes things like nahot, which is chickpeas. And we bring on a hot dried from Afghanistan, and the same for lobia, which is red kidney bean. Again, we bring it directly from Afghanistan. It's also got things like okra and spinach, so it's a really nutritious, crowd-pleasing dish. And we've seen people who are vegetarian or vegan and just meat eaters that have really enjoyed the dish. So that's one of our more popular ones. Another thing that people really enjoy in Ramadan is things like soups and salads. So we have a traditional Afghan Ramadan soup, which is, it uses a meat broth from our meat, and it has chickpeas, coriander, parsley, lots of vegetables in there, and it's a really nice kind of flavorful introduction, and it's water, so it helps with hydration as well.
Yes, because that's an issue, isn't it? Yeah,
sure.
I must say a thing that really caught my eye was the fruit salad, which I just thought just looked fantastic.
Yeah, the fruit salad is a very traditional family recipe, in fact. So it uses Palestinian dates, pomegranate, and the dressing is made with freshly squeezed orange juice and orange blossom water. You mix that up and it adds such a fragrant kind of floral flavour to the fruit salad. It's a really delicious one and people have really loved it.
And you have an ice cream as well.
Yeah, it's a homemade one now as well. We actually got an ice cream machine, I think just a couple of days ago now, to make homemade ice cream. I can't remember how you pronounce it.
Shiryach.
That. And it's got caramel in it, it's got rose water in it. It's honestly, it's so yummy. It's so good. And we actually put it in the middle of some of our baklava. So you can have baklava, ice cream, and then baklava on top. So you've got this like incredible, delicious, syrupy, ice creamy
sandwich.
Yumminess.
When's Ramadan likely to end? When does Eid?
We're expecting Eid to be in the evening of the 30th, so that'll be Saturday night. And you were saying it coincides with Mother's Day as
well. Yeah, so Mother's Day is during the day on Sunday, and then Eid begins in the evening.
Right, OK. So are you doing anything special for Eid? Are you opening longer or anything like that?
Yeah, so we'll be open from 8 o'clock in the morning in Eid, so you can come get your coffee fixies bright and early, which I think Muslims are going to be very happy for after a month of no morning coffee. And we'll be closing at midnight as well. We're going to have sweet cones, halal sweet cones. I'll have a shiryach stall outside, which is the Afghan ice cream that Lily just mentioned to you about, with the cardamom and rose water.
And that will be outside?
That will be just outside where the seats
yeah.
are, so
oh,
people can
good.
Pick right. it up on their way out.
Because the prayer is going to be on Parker's Peace, isn't it? So people are going to come past and go from and to, so they can just sort of go like, oh, well, there's something going on over there, and hopefully pick up some yummy treats on the way.
Right. What's the reaction been to, I mean, but I suppose you're staying open till midnight, but also particularly to the iftar. You know, are people pleased? Is it something that they feel that they've lacked in the past?
People have really enjoyed it. So we didn't know how people would receive it. It's our first Ramadan. You know, we've not been open for a full year yet. But people have really loved it. The cost has attracted a lot of people, and we've had a lot of surprise.
Because this is extraordinarily reasonably priced, isn't it? It's £25 for a
three-course meal, yeah. And you get complimentary Afghan tea with it as well. So it is really reasonably priced. For us, it's important as an Afghan restaurant that we can serve our food to Afghans as well as everybody else in the community. So this is not a restaurant for the elite or an exclusive restaurant. It's for absolutely everyone to come, enjoy great food and be able to afford it and go home happy. And people have loved it. People have taken, especially the iftar menus have been really popular. We've had lots of people ordering it out as well. So we've done lots of catering events. We also catered to Cambridge Central Mosque last Monday for the iftar there. So we served 350 people from our iftar menu. And it's been wonderful. One thing we've also noticed is businesses coming as part of inclusion and diversity with colleagues to break their fast with their Muslim colleagues. And we find that to be really beautiful, to create a space that everyone is welcome, and you know, Muslims and non-Muslims are able to break their fast together.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Is it good to be part of it, Lily?
I feel incredibly honoured. I feel so privileged to be able to like experience this, because growing up, I've born and bred around here. I grew up in the Fens. I was very much like not really exposed to different religions or like even different cultures growing up. So being able to work here and having the honour to, you know, just be a part of it all together has been really, like, educational and really special for me, yeah.
Given that people are fasting during the day, are you actually open during the day?
Yes, we still open at 9 o'clock in the morning. We've actually introduced some lunchtime meals starting at 6:50. They're still available for everybody. And while some of us are fasting, a lot of us aren't. We have a really diverse team that we're incredibly proud of, including Lily. So yes, we're absolutely still open for everyone.
Yeah, that's a very reasonable lunchtime price. That's 6:50.
We had a surprise mention in one of the newspapers that we weren't expecting. So it is very reasonable, and we have a mix of vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free options. So hopefully something for everyone, and we can't wait for you all to try it.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks very much, Miriam, Lily. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you.
What a good place Noshi is, and it's very welcoming to everybody. And it's the final iftar this coming Tuesday and Wednesday, but their regular menu continues until midnight for the rest of the week up to Eid. And actually, I should also mention, they've just installed a tandoori oven as well, so they can do some nice breads.
Mm.
A great place.
OK, time for a bit more news now, and we start in Congratulations Corner, where today we see Amelie, which has been awarded 2 AA rosettes, a huge accolade, and congratulations to The Yard in Ely, which was 2 years old yesterday. Many congratulations to them both. Also at The Yard in Ely, the kitchen and bar will be closed on the 1st of April for repairs, but the coffee bar will be open from 9 till 4, as will the indoor area, the pods and the children's area too.
On the 3rd of April at the Food Museum in Stowmarket, there's an Easter chocolate truffles workshop. And at the same venue, from the 29th of March to the 21st of February 2027, there's a school dinners exhibition.
There's street food and music in Ely Market Square on Good Friday. That's the 18th of April from 4 till 8:30 p.m.
And on to market news. The Grantchester pop-up spring market is on the 5th of April from 10:30 to 3:30. There is home decor, pre-loved items such as clothes, and lots of food and drink like Grape Britannia, Hesketh Cider. They use apples that would otherwise go to waste to produce cider in South Cambridgeshire. There's Pachin's table sauces, chocolat, and if you're feeling peckish, HK Hit Wrap will be there with street food, and Coffee Officina will be selling cups of coffee as well as bags of beans. And also, there'll be the kombucha, there'll be local honey, there'll be a cheese stall, all sorts of things. The pop-up is at Grantchester Village Hall, and entry is free.
Farmers markets are different from standard food markets. You can find goods from local producers and chat to them at the market about their produce. Ely Farmers Market is there on the second and fourth Saturday of every month, and it's very good too, featuring a large number of stalls. And if you're listening to us live, Ely Farmers Market is currently on and lasts until 3:30 this afternoon.
Tomorrow, the 23rd of March, it's the Cheveley Farmers Market near Newmarket, and other farmers markets coming up soon are on the last Sunday of the month, the Grandsons Farmers Market, so the next one there is the 30th of March, it runs from 9 till 1. On the first Saturday of the month is Linton Farmers Market, that runs from 9 till 12, and the next one there is the 5th of April, and next time we'll have an update with information about other farmers markets.
Flourish has a plant sale on the 26th of April with some rare varieties, and the Linton Kitchen will be serving cakes. Beers and wines will be flowing too.
And that's all the news for now. Wine news coming up, along with Steve Thompson's foraging tips and his private dinners with Chong Chong Bo providing matching wines. Also, as Tim Hayward starts a new role at the Financial Times, we ask about his work as a restaurant reviewer. And that's after the break in 2 minutes' time. Don't go away.
Cambridge Radio. On Wednesday nights, we bring you highlights from the Cambridge Band Competition, featuring the best of local new music and raising funds for Strawberry Fair. And this year, the band competition is celebrating its 40th anniversary. Join us at the Portland Arms as bands from across the region compete for a place in the grand final. The Cambridge Band Competition, online whenever you want, and Wednesday at 9 on Cambridge Radio.
There's a new look to retirement. It's Strawberry Fields in Stapleford, a brand new Rangeford retirement village. Luxury independent living with a vibrant community. There's a restaurant and bar, along with a village green, gym, spa, and much more. Take a tour of the stunning 1, 2 and 3 bedroom show homes and find complete peace of mind at Strawberry Fields in Stapleford.
Rangefordvillages.co.uk, exclusively for over 60s.
I knew I was drinking too much, but I didn't know why. I thought I was on my own with my problems, but I called Alcoholics Anonymous in Cambridge, not knowing what to expect. They didn't judge or criticise me. AA gave me the support I needed to stop drinking and get myself back on track. If you're worried about your drinking, Alcoholics Anonymous can help you too. You could join one of their meetings in Cambridge or chat to them on the phone. You are one step away. Call Alcoholics Anonymous on 01603 621 128.
Listen to Cambridge Radio on your smart speaker.
Say Ask Radio Player for Cambridge Radio.
Welcome back to Flavour and to Steve Thompson, the foraging chef, who we haven't heard from for a while. Sue Bailey spoke with him recently.
It's the most beautiful sunny day today, and I am talking to Steve Thompson, the foraging chef, about what he's been up to recently. So we're doing an early spring catch-up. So, hi, Steve.
Hi, Sue. Yeah, we've been keeping nice and busy so far this year. What we're doing at the moment, a lot of, is private dinners. So myself and Chong are still working together, Chong from Amphora. And if you miss our pop-ups, we're available to book for private dinner events. So we come to your house still, we do our 5-course tasting menus with 10 wine pairings. But we just do it in the comfort of your own home. And that's been keeping us really busy so far this year.
Are there any challenges to that?
I mean, yes. It's having to transport things to new venues and new areas all the time is always bringing that, but it's kind of what we quite like. It keeps us on our toes, it's keeping us being inventive. We're having to think about that when we write our menus on how we can do that better and more effectively, but we love it, we enjoy it, and it seems to be going down really well at the moment.
And are these typically for special events, or are they just people who are really into their food and wine?
We've had a bit of both, but mainly they are special events that people book us for. We're quite a premium product in what we do, so we're certainly not an everyday event. What we're doing is helping you celebrate special occasions and just great get-togethers with friends.
Mm, that sounds great. So what's the sort of numbers we're talking about here?
We like to keep it fairly small, so tens is our smallest, and we can go up to anything up to 30, but ideally for us is sort of like the 15 to 18 cover mark is brilliant. It allows us to really shine and give you a great service.
Well, that sounds really fun. So that's what's been happening for you on the dining side and linked obviously into your foraging. But what about actually getting out and foraging? What would you say is good to be going to go and forage now?
Yeah, so at this time of the year, it's, I'd say it's probably the amateur forager's favourite time. It's allium season, which for most people means wild garlic. So we've been out picking alliums since sort of mid-late January, getting into the crow's garlic nice and early, which is fantastic. We've had a couple of weeks now of all of the fewer-flowered leeks and three-cornered garlic coming up, and now we're just starting to get the first kind of patches of wild garlic coming up. It's important at this time of the year to remind everyone how we pick safely and responsibly, especially for wild garlic. It's the time of the year where I often go to patches of wild garlic and find that there's just whole big areas taken and destroyed and everything's trampled. And it's nice to be respectful, and it's nice to look after the areas we're picking. And I think that it's important for a couple of reasons. One, and first, I've already had one incident of this year, and there is always multiple every year. The safety of picking wild garlic by grabbing it in bunches is not there. So what you need to do is pick leaf by leaf. And the reason for this is that it grows next to a plant called Arum maculatum, otherwise known as Lords and Ladies. And that is poisonous. When you hold them next to each other, they do look quite different. However, they can grow through clumps of wild garlic. And I've already had one chef send me a picture of their find this year and spotted two or three leaves of this in and amongst it. And I get it every year from amateur foragers. And it's just, if you pick it leaf by leaf, you don't get that issue because you see and your attention to detail is much there. If you just go to an area and start grabbing bunches and bunches and bunches of it, it can get lost in that. And you could go, okay, I'm going to pick that out when I wash it and I'll notice it later. The more chances you give yourself of due diligence, the better, more likely you're going to be to keep yourself safe. So if you pick one leaf at a time, you're going to be a lot safer than if you pick it in bunches. Now, the way to tell the difference between the two is to look at the back of the leaf. So all alliums smell of garlic. That's a great way to tell if it's an allium or not. But if you've been picking it for a while, your fingers are going to be covered in those oils and are going to naturally smell of garlic. Well, not that. And they're going to smell of garlic as well. So if you turn the leaves over, wild garlic has little veins that run from the base to the tip of the leaf in a straight line. If you look at the back of the arum, it looks like kind of smashed ice. The veins are going in all every different direction. And it's a really easy way to tell the difference. Now, the other reason why we don't like to pick in great big handfuls is it just damages the area. If you start, like, picking all the wild garlic and grabbing it all, you're going to pull up loads of bulbs and everything like that, and it's just not going to be there as much for next year. You're also, if you're the kind of person to be going in there grabbing fistfuls of it, you're probably not looking at where your feet's going or anything like that. You're going to be stamping on. Alliums mainly reproduce through bulb splitting, much more than they do by the seed dispersal. So those bulbs then splitting and creating new plants is what we need for it to carry on. And I've noticed a couple of really good patches in the local area that have been dwindling so much over the last 5 or 6 years. And I think it's because people are coming in there and just grabbing it in handfuls. So the best thing we can do when picking it is pick leaf by leaf. It might take you a little bit longer. I don't think you can overpick it if you're being sensible like that, as long as you make sure you're not leaving an obvious footprint. I think that's the rule with everything in foraging. Make the patch look like you've not been there. If you're taking a couple of leaves and then taking another little step and taking a couple more, that's responsible picking.
Oh, I like that. That sounds like mindful foraging, really thinking about what you're doing. But what is the risk of eating an arum leek by mistake, Steve?
So if you eat an arum leaf, it's covered in oxalate crystals, which are like thousands of tiny little needles. So it's basically going to be like chewing on glass. Now, I've not done it myself, and I have spoken to somebody who has eaten it on purpose as a test to see. And it's very, very unpleasant for a period of about 24 hours, and it's really not nice. A lot of swelling, a lot of burning sensations, and it's not one to recommend. So, yeah, it's best to be very, very careful and keep that separate. And that's just one that will do you that harm by chewing on it. But I wouldn't touch the plant a lot either, because it is covered in those crystals. So, yeah, it's good to know the difference between your arums and your wild garlics. I would say that if you're a cautious forager, it's easy to tell the difference. The only time it's really tricky is when they're first shooting through, because they both curl through the soil looking very similar. It's more the uncautious forager that's going to have an issue with it, who's going in a bit more clumsily. Now, there's other great alliums as well, which you're encouraged to pick more of. So if you have a look into things like fewer-flowered leeks and three-cornered leeks, then they grow a lot around Cambridge, far more abundant than wild garlic, and they taste better, in my opinion. They're less sickly sweet. They've got a wonderful little onion side to the garlic as well in them, and they're just a fantastic plant, and they're also an invasive species, so we're encouraged to pick them lots.
Do you have pictures of these on your social media, Steve?
Yes, we can put some pictures of them up this week on our Instagram reels. That's no problem, and we'll put them up there.
What else is there out that you would suggest for foraging in late March, early April?
So at the moment, another great plant, which is absolutely all over the hedgerows around Cambridge at the moment, is Alexanders. And they're often thought as a seaside kind of vegetable. It's where you find them most of the time, but they are much more inland as well. And I wonder if they're another plant that's benefited from the more we grit the roads, the more saline the roadsides have become. Now, certainly in the sort of Forbourne area, it is absolutely everywhere all over the roadsides, and a lot of the South Cam villages it is as well. And it's a member of the carrot family. Now, that's a family that we often have caution about when we're teaching foraging, because it has like hemlock water dropwort or the classic poison hemlock in it. So we're a lot more cautious. However, Alexander's, I would say, is one of the easier ones to identify. It's got a very, very strong perfumed celery kind of lovagey smell and flavour to it. So it's fantastic. Its leaves are very different to the fern-like ones, which are the more harder to identify ones. They're much more kind of almost broadleaf in look. So it's worth having a look at. At the moment, you've got all the leaves out and the buds are starting to come through. And the buds are fantastic. They're almost like a yellow kind of broccoli in a way, where they come through, and just an amazing flavour. We fry them off in loads of butter and just, oh, have a load of those with a little bit of poached egg or something like that on some thick cut sourdough toast, and it's fantastic.
That sounds absolutely delicious. And what about going on foraging tours? Are you going to be doing some of those coming up soon, Steve?
Yes, we are going to be. If you keep an eye on our social medias at the moment, we should be announcing in the next week or two a couple of springtime foraging dates. I don't think we'll be doing a lot this year. We've got some other exciting plans for later in the year that we can speak about later. I think that we'll probably have 3 maybe foraging tours coming on in the spring. So do keep an eye and get booked up quick because they will fill up fast.
They sound great. And having been on one myself, I would certainly agree they are a brilliant way to learn about foraging. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thanks, Sue.
Steve Thompson there. And next time, we'll get some ideas from Steve about how to preserve the wild alliums you've foraged. He's putting some pictures of the various alliums he mentioned today on his Instagram account at some point to help you identify them.
There's Supercharge with Wine, 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 taking us into our wine news. And Cambridge Wine Merchants' March tasting flight at the Bridge Street branch is wines from the Loire Valley. There's a Muscadet, a sparkling Chenin Blanc, Cabernet Franc, and a Pinot Noir. These are all available for the rest of March. 4 50ml servings for £25.
There's a whisky tasting at the Yard in Ely on the 4th of April with 6 whiskies to taste, and your host will guide you through them with information about how they're made, what gives them character, and how to fully appreciate them. There'll be light nibbles between whiskies.
Great Britannia in Chesterton Road has a tasting of English sparkling wines on the 26th of March with wines from 2011 to 2021. Now, this runs from 7:30 to 9:30 and costs £32. And on the 9th of April, there'll be a tasting of Pinot Noir, with 6 English Pinot Noirs that show the styles of wine that can be made. Reds, whites, sparkling. It costs £27 and also runs from 7:30 to 9:30.
The Wine Rooms in Hills Road has a Rhone versus the rest of the world wine tasting with Lavi on the 26th of March and a Best of New World wine tasting on the 9th of April with Steve Hovington. Both begin at 7pm and they cost £30.
And there's a Spring Wine Fair at Cambridge Wine Merchants' Cherry Hinton Road branch on the 19th of April. It's an informal walk-around wine fair showcasing wines from the milder weather and the longer days. The cost is £10 for a free glass of sparkling wine and 5 vouchers to redeem against tasting samples. But you can also buy further vouchers on the night, or if you pay £25, as well as the free sparkling wine, you have no need to buy any further vouchers. Tickets for this can be purchased online or from branches of Cambridge Wine Merchants. And that is our news for today.
Those of us who enjoy Tim Hayward's writing will probably be well aware that he has stopped being the Financial Times restaurant reviewer. Another very good writer, Jay Rayner, has moved from The Observer to take over that role. Instead, Tim will be writing more generally about food matters that interest him. And we'll have a look at what his first such column is like shortly. But first, let's listen to a conversation I had with him in the COVID period about his approach to restaurant reviewing.
When you're in the restaurant, when you've got there, how often do they realise that it's you? You are a reviewer for a national daily of some repute.
Depends. The London ones, most of them, have their PR companies give them a list of the reviewers, the critics, and they provide photographs, recent photographs of us, and they pin those up on the back of the door going through the dining room. And so we could be spotted really, really easily. I think I've been reviewing for a year or two before I actually got onto that list, and I was quite proud. A friend of mine was, she was making a film in a restaurant, and she texted me and said, Tim, I've just seen your picture on the back of the door. You've arrived, mate. I said, oh, that's great. I'm really proud. She said, yeah, except what they've written underneath. And I said, well, what was that? They said, looks like Fat Corbin. I actually had to go back to that.
I don't think that's true.
I actually had to go back to that restaurant later on to review it. And they knew who I was by that point. And like a shot, they were out all over the place. And it was a very good restaurant, very good review, really enjoyed it. And at the end, I said to the very nervous waiter, do you really think I look like Fat Jeremy Corbyn? And his face went absolutely ashen. But he still got a good review.
But you've got to preserve your anonymity before you get there.
Yeah.
So how do you go about that? I mean, presumably booking under another name.
Yeah. So I've got I'm trying to remember how long the list is at the moment. I think I've got about, I've probably got about five names at the moment that I'm currently using to book through. They're all entirely fictional, and you know, not sort of witty or clever or easy to spot or jokey.
Yeah.
They're just, you know, that's it. And I can set up email addresses very, very quickly. So I just basically, I just have an email address for this new name and set up a booking engine. Download one of the booking apps in that name, and then book it in that name. And I go in, and there's no way they'll know it's me until they see me, or until I put my credit card in at the end of the evening.
But when they do spot you, does the level of service change, or do they take it in their stride normally?
I've never seen any real evidence of anything sort of jumping about. I mean, I actually was in a restaurant once with another very, very much more famous restaurant critic who will remain nameless, was in the restaurant at the same time. And it was one of the Corbin and King places. And actually, the entire restaurant ground to a halt because he was being served. Everybody was paying special attention to him, and nobody else. And the people were getting quite grumpy about it. You know, they couldn't get attention from their waiters because everybody was so nervous about this one guy. So I think it depends on who you are. I'm quite low down the pecking order for reviewers, I think.
Were you there as a reviewer as well in this restaurant?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So did you? Did your two different, very different experiences show in the reviews?
I think they did, actually, yes.
Yeah.
I think things have changed recently, obviously, because we're not really interested in doing bad reviews at the moment. People don't want to read them. It would be very unsupportive to do it.
No, I'm not sure that I've ever seen a bad review from you.
Well, it's an interesting thought. I think most reviewers would prefer to write good reviews. We can choose where we go, so we choose nice places. We choose places we're likely to like. But you can't really be credible and be 100% positive all the time. People won't take things seriously. And I think for many years there's been a thing whereby a couple of times a year you just put in a real stinker. But if you actually look at who the real stinkers are, they're very, very often some sort of either some incredibly poncy place in Knightsbridge that nobody will ever go to, or some celebrity's vanity joint, and they're just fair game. And yeah. So you find a place like that and you can really go to 10.
Right, so places whose, I suppose, livelihoods you're not going to undermine.
Yes, very much that.
And how do you feel yourself when you're going into a restaurant to review it? Are you know, is it eager anticipation? Is there an element of anxiety?
I think these days it's just very businesslike. Yeah, go in, check the menu. It's fairly clear as you're going through the list which ones are going to give you a good story, which menu items can give you a good story. And if you're looking around and you spot a couple of interesting things about the room or the people in it or something along those lines, you make a note of that in your head. And by the time you've got a couple of talkable menu items and a couple of nice things to say about the room, you know, you're not that far off being, you know, your word count's done. So you just need to, I think you're looking for the hits and the wins. And then once you've got those, you can sit and relax more. You relax into it, and then more often, more interesting stuff comes up.
Well, your reviews often contain quite a lot of detail about the, you know, the cooking. So is that because of your own knowledge, or are you a reviewer that asks a lot of questions of the staff?
I would ask questions of the staff if I couldn't work it out myself. But yeah, I think it's my job to know how these things are done. It's their job to be able to inform me if I need to know, but that's where that comes from. And I do think I've always been very conscious that there is a comment that's made about some of the top level reviewers that they were writing more about themselves than about the restaurant or about the food, and I've never felt terribly comfortable with that. So I've always majored on the food and the event and the pleasure of it for that reason.
Do they take long to write?
Well, I suppose the thing about being a writer, people always say you spend remarkably little time writing, but you spend your whole time being the writer. So what I'll tend to do is do the review, come out, make a few notes. I'll have usually shot the menu for reference into my phone, and then I'll probably just sit on it for a few days thinking about it. Something will come to mind as a sort of a lead paragraph, a lead into it. And then the time comes and I've got the time to do it, I'll sit down and probably bang it out in an hour.
Oh, really?
Wow. Mm. But then that then sits there on the desk for two more days. And at the end of that time, you go back over it, tweak it, make it look better, make it look more interesting, and then you leave it overnight and file the following morning.
Are there any constraints on how much you spend? I mean, a part of the pleasure of a restaurant is matching, let's say, the wine with the food. But, you know, we all know that wine can be terribly expensive in a restaurant. So are you operating under a financial ceiling?
I do have an upper limit. If I break it, because I've gone somewhere really exceptional and strange, I'll either pick up the extra myself because I wanted to do it because it was wonderful, or I'll negotiate it back with my boss and say, come on, I've given you two sandwich shops in Coventry in the last 2 months. You know, it's a bad time. You're going to cover me for the rest of this. That sometimes works. I think the wine thing is, at the moment, because most of the reviewing I'm doing at the moment, I'm driving all over the country, sort of getting out of the car, going into a COVID-secure restaurant, having the meal, getting out and driving back again. And that means I'm largely not drinking. I don't write about wine in the reviews for two reasons. Number one, I'm not very good with wine. I don't know a great deal about wine. It's not my area of expertise. And secondly, I'm literally back to back in the paper with Jancis Robinson. And I see no point in trying to compete. So I'm on a fairly short word count. I think mine are mostly around 800 words. If I started trying to describe the wine as well, I wouldn't get half the food out. So it suits me really well to stay clear of the wine, let Jancis cover that on her own pages, and then, do it that way. So I usually stay in under the budget.
And Alan has today's FT along with The Guardian's Feast magazine here. So we're going to have a look at them now, yeah?
Yeah. The Tim Hayward's piece is called A Three-Tier Theory of Sandwiches. And part of it says, I have spent the last month obsessively making sandwiches, beginning with the most simple and complicating matters from that point onwards, refining, testing, often enjoying them in an effort to create some structure, to posit a unified theory, a taxonomy by which we might appreciate all sandwiches, from the mimsy, crustless fingers of the classic afternoon tea to the mighty pound of assorted charcuterie of the New York delis. I propose nothing less than three formal orders of the sandwich. And the first order sandwich is something like a fried egg sandwich with just one basic ingredient. A second order sandwich could be egg mayonnaise with anchovy butter and cress. So that's got, besides the egg, it's got the anchovy butter, so it's, you know, more complex. Mm-hmm. Now, where does he say? He says, where the first order sandwich is fundamentally classical, the second order is romantic and can even stray into the Baroque. And then the third order sandwich, like the New York City bacon, egg and cheese, is one where I suppose you just pile it all in. Yeah. Anyway, it's a very good piece and very amusing. But most of the Financial Times magazine today is given over to food. It's a big deal today. Mm. And much of it is given up to various food writers, their food writers, with advice on food eating. So, for example, Jay Rayner says, never go to a small plates restaurant with more than one other person because there's never space on the table for all the small plates. And then there's a panel who agree or disagree, and the panel include people like the chap from Top Jaw, who's so entertaining on our Instagram feeds. So it's very good. Have you got time for me to carry on, Matt?
Certainly do.
Right. Anyway, so, of course, when a newspaper or a TV station has something big, the rivals have spoilers so they don't lose audience. Mm. So The Guardian today, because Otto Lengi no longer writes for Feast, instead, once every, I think, 3 months, he writes for the Saturday magazine. So there's a feature from Otto Lengi in today's Saturday magazine in which he talks about intermittent fasting, keto, paleo. Yotam gave them a shot and said all they did was mess with his brain. So he just talks about some simple cooking, roast chicken with oregano and butter beans, roast potatoes with peppers and garlic. And then in Feast itself, I was attracted by Felicity Cloke's masterclass in which she makes oat cakes, the biscuit type of oat cakes, not the Midlands type of oat cakes.
Okay.
And oat cakes are something I've been pondering about making for some time, so I think maybe I shall take inspiration and possibly next time bring one along for you, Matt.
Lovely.
Anyway, today's Guardian and Financial Times, well worth reading.
Yeah, that's not the music I was expecting.
I've never heard that before.
No. Should we go with that anyway? That's going to be our Green Onions substitute.
Oh, is it? Right. On to jobs.
On to jobs. So on to our jobs section now. And the Cambridge Blue in Gwydir Street is looking for a new team member, able to work every Friday and Saturday, and full training will be given. Just email leoncambridgeblue@gmail.com if you're interested.
OK, we're running out of time. I'll just summarise the others. There's a head baker vacancy at Hot Numbers, details on their website. Dolcedo Social in Eddington's looking for full and part-time staff. And Coffee Inn has barista and baker chef positions available.
All of which brings us to the end of today's programme. And you can catch Flavour on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon, repeated Mondays at 2 p.m. And we're available as a podcast from all the usual places. Up next on Cambridge Radio is The Music Mix, followed by Home with Lucy Malazzo at 4.
And we'll be back on the 5th of April with lots more food and drink news, jobs and features. So until then...
goodbye.
And we've got a few seconds to spare, Matt, haven't we?
We've got luxury today.
What should we talk about?
Food, I guess, obviously.
Right, OK.
Goodbye, everyone.
Esperanza, aunque te esperará, mi corazón se avanza, un fantasma cuerpo real. Mi amor no tiene venganza, aunque te matará, este viejo no se cansa.